Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Geek Town Radio. This week I have with me... Matt!
Hey David, how are you doing?
I'm right, how are you?
I'm okay, yep. Not too bad. Yeah.
Good. It's not been a particularly busy TV week, but what have you been doing?
Well, since the last time I was on, I've watched two different shows, one of which I haven't finished because there's more of it. one of which is a new first season of a show. There was a thing called The Rain, which dropped on Netflix probably a couple of months ago or something.
Danish drama, yeah.
It's essentially the idea that there's these like bunkers, like these underground bunkers and stuff, and the rain is kind of like causes you to die in a particular way, like it will infect you if it touches your skin and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And essentially the idea is that this company called, I think it's Apollon or something, it's the main character's dad that works there.
Right.
She's kind of walking around with her younger brother who transitions to a teenager during the first season, because I think there's like a mini time skip or something, because at one point they show a montage of them living in there for a couple of years or something, and then suddenly he is this teenager.
Right.
But it's essentially the idea that them and of course the rest of the world will live in bunkers if they can get access to them, of course. Not everybody does have access to them, and you'll stay under there and avoid the rain. The rain's not like a constant thing, so I think it's the thing of if you run out of supplies or something, you have to wait for the rain to go and venture out and get some supplies. They meet a bunch of other characters, and that it sort of takes itself from there. It's a bit like if you had Walking Dead but you took zombies out, put some rain in and put like bunkers in instead or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's certainly a bit like that in terms of the groups, because they meet them and they're not sure if they're hostile or what the situation is. It's only, I think, 8 episodes of the first season, and some of them are like 35 minutes, some of them are like 45. So it's not too long to get through. I'm not sure if it's been renewed for a second season, but certainly room for a second season.
Yeah.
So
yes, it has. It's been renewed for a second season. It's is it subtitled? Because it's a Danish drama, isn't it? I think.
You can actually have it in English, and I didn't find the dubbing to be that bad.
Okay.
I remember when I watched Dark on Netflix, and the dubbing was all sort of out of sync and everything. But it seems to be better. I was fine with it anyway, so I watched it in English.
Okay.
That was quite good. So that's the first season, which is now finished. A show which I started, House of Lies. Have you heard of that before?
Yes, I'm aware of that show. It's already run, hasn't it? Yeah,
it's finished its 5 seasons, but they got the box sets on Now TV. It's a bit like if you struggled with Billions in the way that I did, maybe. It's a bit it's sort of that financial kind of group firm sort of thing, but much simpler. They do get into some nitty gritty stuff, but you can usually tell if they're doing well or not. And it's this group of like 5 people. One of them is played by Kristen Bell from The Good Place, who I liked from that show as well. And it's got the guy who plays War Machine,
Don Cheadle.
He plays a guy called Marty in the show. He's sort of the main character, and he's got his family and the drama and the comedy that come from there. And then there's these two other guys. One of them's called Doogie or Dougie. I can't remember the other guy's name, but they're usually trying to flirt with the women and do all this other sort of like comedic sort of stuff, and they like take the mick out of each other, and that, they're the good sort of comedy duo for the show. And then they of course have some chemistry with the other two as well. So it's basically like if you took Billions seasons, made it a bit more of a comedy and simplified sort of the firm stuff.
Yeah.
But made it like a 30-minute comedy. So it helped me to get on with it better, because I was like, okay, I don't understand everything these characters are saying, but I can understand more if they're doing well in their transactions or whatnot. So I finished the first season yesterday. I really quite got into it. And then I thought, hey, I'll just finish the first season. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the rest of that. And I know it's completed. It won't be cancelled or anything. So I'm looking forward to finishing it. That should be quite fun.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed Origins, I started again.
Okay.
Well, I don't mean started again. That's not what I mean. Started playing it again because I started the two DLC levels.
Right, okay.
One of them is called The Hidden Ones, which takes place... I think what you're supposed to do is finish the game, then play The Hidden Ones, because it sort of takes what happens at the end of Origins and continues that, but like 4 years later. It's a strange thing.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like 4 years has passed in what happens, but it's clear that some time has passed and like the creed of the assassins has been developed and everything. But you take control of Bayek again and you do missions with your creed and stuff, and with his wife again and everything, because she kind of separated off. That's not really much of a spoiler, because it sort of happens at the start,
right?
Because they don't really work together much. They just sort of see each other and stuff. But like when one of them hears that the other's in danger, they'll come and help the other one out or something. So I played that. Was actually quite short, the first DLC. And then there's another one called The Curse of the Pharaohs, which is a bit more like you're facing these sort of not demon kind of things, but these sort of special kind of enemies that have all these weird powers and stuff. And they're very difficult to fight, especially in the boss fights as well. They make these sort of strange kind of noises. They're clearly not completely human, so hence the curse of the pharaohs. This curse has done whatever it has to them. I haven't finished. I don't know the entire story yet, because I haven't actually finished the DLC, so there's probably more of an explanation as to why it happened. But yeah, it's essentially this group of like really deadly villains, and during like the first cutscene when they come in, it just shows this thing just going and killing loads of people, and then Bayek's like, oh, I have to fight this thing now. So yeah, that was quite good. I haven't finished it yet, so I'll see what it's like towards the end. There's four boss fights, I found out yesterday.
Okay.
And I did the second one yesterday. They're not easy, but it's one of them things where if you work out the rhythm of the enemy, you can sort of do it. It just takes a bit of time.
Right, yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah. So that's been quite good. Really like what they did with Origins and the new sort of system that they had for the combat and everything. Because
I haven't tried it yet. I kind of fell a bit out of love with the Assassin's Creed games.
Okay.
And but Origins, I may go to it once the price has started to drop now. So I may go and pick up a copy.
Yeah, because Origins is a good place to, like you said, if you did fall off Assassin's Creed, because the story kind of fell off as well.
Yeah.
Because they basically abandoned the original plot and now they're going down some other route. But yeah, Origins is a good place to jump back in, and it looks like Odyssey is doing similar things, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But no, I'm really happy with what they did with Assassin's Creed. So
good.
Going to TV stuff, Cloak and Dagger has had 3 episodes so far. It had a double premiere, and then it had another episode last week. Quite good. I didn't like episode 3 that much. I didn't like the whole jumping back and forth with time stuff. But I felt like the first 2 episodes did a good job of setting up the characters and still leaving mysteries to like, how do their powers work? How did they get them? Because I heard that they can work together in some sort of way.
Yes.
But of course they haven't like realized that yet. But it's that thing of the heroes working out their powers and how they work and what they can and can't do and stuff. So I've quite enjoyed that so far.
I'm enjoying it. It's a little slow. I could do with them speeding it up a little bit more, but there is an awful lot of them trying to work out their powers, and that seems to have got stretched out quite a lot. But overall, as a show, I'm enjoying it. It's a bit like what you're talking about next. Runaways was another one that I felt stretched things out a little bit in places as well. Enjoyable series, but it stretched things out.
Yeah, I quite like Runaways as well. It's kind of similar, but in more of a group ensemble sort of sense.
Yeah.
As all like going to the same school and stuff together. Because I don't think Cloak and Dagger, they go to like the same school, but they're not in the same class or something.
I'm not even sure that. I mean, the girl barely seems to go to school anyway. So.
Right. Yeah, but they keep talking about sort of randomly meeting up and stuff, so they're not exactly in the same class or anything, but and I don't mind the whole like teenager high school kind of thing.
No.
Maybe I just relate to it at my age a bit more or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been quite good. The Runaways has been good. They did take their time to get to the whole actual runaway bit of the story. But I really like what they've set up, at least with the first season, with them all having their powers and realizing what their parents are up to and essentially being on the run, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that in the second season, as they've like properly set everything up now and they're used to their, at least somewhat used to their powers. They'll probably discover more things as they go across. I mean, even in like season four of The Flash, Barry's still working out new things with his powers and everything.
True.
So I'm looking forward to seeing how they all develop together and stuff. I've not like read the comics or anything, so I have no idea like what could be on the way and stuff.
No, I've not read the comics either, but I mean, I agree. I mean, they've set it up into a nice place for a second season. It just took a very, very long time to get to, to that point, which it basically took the entire first season to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. I think Dagger's the same amount of episodes, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
So it looks like that might do similar things, but just with two people instead of like five or six. So yeah, both of them have been pretty good. So apart from E3 stuff, that's all from my list.
Yeah, a couple of new shows. I mean, it's been a very slow week on sort of TV, and because a lot of things have sort of ended and stuff. So it's been slow news-wise, and it's also freed up a bit of time for me to watch movies as well this week. So TV-wise, though, Carter, which is a new show that's on Alibi, stars Jerry O'Connell as an actor that basically has a meltdown. You find out sort of he's a fellow actor has been sleeping with his wife or girlfriend, and he sort of goes and punches him on a red carpet event and ends up going to, he's Canadian and ends up going sort of home to Canada. That's sort of the setup. He plays a police detective on TV and he ends up going back to his other house that he has in Canada, and it turns out that one of his housekeepers who looks after the house when he's not there is in trouble, and he gets involved with the local police who went to, and the detective in charge is somebody that he went to school with and his old school friends. So it ends up with them kind of teaming up and solving the case together. It's got very much a feel of shows like Castle to it.
Okay.
It has that sort of feel to it. There's a little bit of sort of, you know, there's this little core group that kind of knew each other as kids, so it's not exactly the same as Castle, but it is sort of an outsider coming in and helping out the police. It's that sort of idea. But Jerry O'Connell is very watchable in it. I found it a sort of good, fun 45-minute procedural. It's those sort of things that American TV does quite well. So, or Canadian TV. I think actually is a Canadian show, but it's that sort of show that they do quite well over there. So that's quite enjoyable. If you like those sort of police procedurals that are kind of dramedy sort of things, Carter's quite a good one to go and watch. Legion, I've been watching as well. I actually left it and ended up binge watching my way through about 5 episodes this week because it's the finale coming up, I think, this week. Huh. And I mean, I adored the first season of Legion. The second season has been good, but I think they've ratcheted up the weirdness to a point where it's being detrimental to the overall plot in places. It's got slightly strange for the sake of being strange, and the weirdness is sort of battling to get a coherent story through to me in places. So they need to dial that down a little bit. It was always a very fine line, and they walked it brilliantly with season one. I think they've slightly tipped over a bit with season two. Hopefully that'll get rectified again with season three, because it is coming back for another season, I think. But I've been enjoying it, but it is getting increasingly more difficult to follow it this second season, which would be fine if it was all still interesting. But there are points where I find myself wanting to kind of look at my phone, and I was just like, you know, this is just weird for the sake of being weird, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd like to see them just pull it back a little bit and push the plot up a little bit, but we'll see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't even started season two yet because just had a bunch of CW stuff and all that to finish. But now that those shows have mostly finished, I'll start it soon.
Yeah, that was my sort of thing. Was there was too much other stuff on for me to just keep watching it regularly. So, and that's also a sign that I wasn't enjoying it as much, because if I had been, I would have stayed to watch it weekly. But I went back to it and sort of binged my way through about 5 episodes, and I'm now caught up for the finale this week.
I mean, I remember when I was behind on Riverdale season 2 for the first half, and then I remember during like that slow Christmas period, I watched like all the 9 episodes, not all at once. I caught up with the 9 episodes and enjoyed it so much more. And then I remember just that sort of following through and enjoying the second half even more as well. So sometimes it's better to leave things and let them build up a bit because you might enjoy them. So
I did the same thing with Riverdale. I left Riverdale and ended up binge watching it. And I actually did enjoy where they took it. It was just, too many things on at the same time, I think.
I remember when I did actually catch up and then it was weekly, and I'm like, I want a bit more at once, So some shows are better suited for catching up.
Absolutely. I caught a couple of movies this week. War for the Planet of the Apes, which I know has been around quite a while. I just hadn't got around to watching it.
I haven't seen that either.
Directed by Matt Reeves, who is going on to do the Batman movie next. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's a solid ending to a very good trilogy that from very kind of humble beginnings with the, was it Rise was the second one and Dawn was the first one, wasn't it? Dawn was kind of this interesting start of you seeing, how the apes first develop, and then, Rise saw them form into groups and you saw them develop further, and this is kind of a full out battle for the planet between the humans and the apes. Thoroughly enjoyable and really beautifully directed by Matt Reeves, and I hope they don't kind of drag the franchise on now. I would like to see it just stop there and them not necessarily do any more with it, not in this format, if you picked it up again with the sort of big time jumps, so you've got the apes properly more evolved into humans, or and it moved more into the position that the original movies were, maybe if you did it that way. But I think we've got to a suitable end point with that trilogy. I hope they don't end up dragging it out anymore.
There's the video game that came out. It's a bit of a narrative driven sort of thing.
Okay.
I don't really know that much about it.
No.
I think it's to do with the PlayLink or something like that. But it looks quite good. So.
Okay. I also went to the cinema to see Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which we went on Saturday night. I went with a friend, went Saturday night. Perfectly fun couple of hours in the cinema watching dinosaurs chase down and eat people, pretty much. Doesn't quite go where I expected it to go. They spend a little less time on the island than I thought they would, because obviously the basic premise is they are going back to the island because the volcano on the island has become active and is about to explode and they want to save the dinosaurs. That's basically the premise of it. And they don't actually spend as much time on the island as I kind of thought, so you're back in Jurassic World with sort of things broken and things being destroyed and the dinosaurs are loose all over the island. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great fun. I'm sure there are plot holes in it that you could drive a T-Rex through if you actually started to pick it apart, but in the moment I enjoyed it and it was fun, and it's an entertaining way to spend a couple of hours on a sort of Saturday evening as a sort of proper popcorn movie. One of the reasons that I wanted to go and see that is because the game I'm currently playing is Jurassic World Evolution, which is as I've mentioned numerous times before, how much I love games that allow you to build stuff, and this is essentially it's made by Frontier, who are the guys that made another game which I really loved called Planet Coaster, which was a roller coaster theme park building game where you could kind of completely build your own theme parks. And it's the same guys making Jurassic World Evolution, which sort of makes sense because you're essentially in control of a bunch of different Jurassic World parks or Jurassic parks split across like 5 or 6 islands, and you are breeding dinosaurs. You can kind of mess with the DNA sequences to build bigger and better and different types of dinosaurs and changing the skins and stuff. It's a fun base for a game. I think it could do with a little bit more development. There are things that you can do in something like Planet Coaster, which admittedly has been around a lot longer and there's been DLC and that sort of stuff. But there are things with the way that Planet Coaster works that could have done with being kind of pulled over into Jurassic World in terms of how things like shops work. The staffing system is fairly basic, but overall, it's quite good fun being able to play around with the dinosaurs mentors, and you get kind of missions off various people of sort of telling you to breed particular types of dinosaurs, or sometimes you get told that you need to put two particular ones in a pen that you know are going to fight each other. So it's quite good fun, and I am really enjoying it. And it's occasionally they'll get grumpy and escape, and you've got to kind of go and hunt them down, or somebody will sabotage something and leave, and the gates will all open, so you've got to go and round up the dinosaurs and tranquilize them and put them all back. So it's worth getting. It is good fun. I am looking forward to them releasing some DLC to it, though, because I think it's got a lot of potential to expand and add a lot more bits to it, I think, as the as time goes by. But worth getting, I think.
I watched Jurassic World yesterday. I agree with you. It was quite fun. Just a fun sort of 2-hour dinosaur kind of thing, watching Chris Pratt trying to survive with the other characters.
So, yes.
Yeah, and I went in not expecting anything else, really, and I was pretty happy with it. So.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And, the plot was a little bit more interesting than I thought it would be.
Yeah, obviously, yes, they go and try and rescue the dinosaurs, and things aren't what they seem, but I think that's implied in the trailer as well. But thoroughly enjoyable. Don't expect too much from it. It is basically a big Saturday night popcorn movie, but really good fun. The other thing, of course, that has been happening this week is E3. And seeing as you're far more of a gaming person than I thought we'd go through some of the E3 stuff as well. So we're going to move on to an E3 segment next.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So E3 was last week. They had lots of different presentations from various gaming companies and all the various gaming platforms as well. For me, Bethesda were the ones that really stood out. I thought they introduced a solid bunch of games. EA were pathetic, pretty much. Interesting stuff in Microsoft. Ubisoft have a couple of interesting bits. The PS4 panel was... I didn't see all the panels in all the bits. I watched some of the Microsoft one, and I watched the Bethesda one. And then I kind of caught little bits of some of the others. What stood out for you?
Well, it wasn't quite in the PlayStation presentation, but I associated more with PlayStation. Crash Bandicoot next Friday is going to be released on Xbox, Switch, and Steam. It's already out on the PS4. Of course, it came out last year. And they did a previous Stormy Ascent level. It's basically a level from Crash Bandicoot 1 that they cut from the original because they said it might be actually like too difficult. So they included that for free, which will be included when you get the newest versions. And if you have the PlayStation 1, you can just go and download it for free from the store.
Oh, cool.
But they're adding a second level called Future Tense. It's supposed to take inspiration from the other futuristic levels, and also a waterfall type level that got cut. Whether we'll see that level as well pop up in the future is possible, because I heard that was a Crash 2 level that they were going to do. And seeing as they've done DLC for Crash 1 and 3, it might make sense that they do this water level for Crash 2 maybe eventually. But that's going to be included as well. Basically, when you get the new versions of the Switch or the Steam or the Xbox version, the two DLC levels will be included. So you'll know how much I really like Crash.
Yes.
And I'm going to be playing the games again on Xbox and Switch when they come out, and I'll certainly be doing this new Future Tense level. It's the first new piece of content for the Crash trilogy in over 20 years, of course, because they've been out that long. So yeah, it's a new, like completely fresh Crash stuff from the original games, which is really cool. I noticed at the start, because there's like a minute or so of gameplay up on YouTube, there's probably the whole level somewhere, but I didn't look that far into it.
Yeah.
So I do want some surprise.
Yeah, of course.
They've got this thing where in the other futuristic level from Crash 3, they've got like these escalators that go back and forth. At the start of this level, they've got it so that they're going left and right. Whether there'll be more of them later, or they'll do some other remix with it as well. That would be really cool. But yeah, it's not just a level. Of course, you've got the gems, you've got the time trials, which is the most difficult thing, and then you've got the other crystals and stuff as well. So I think there's two gems. I don't know if there is a crystal for this one, but there's the time trial as well. So that will probably keep me busy, because it will probably take me a few hours to do the time trial thing. Because of course, you've got to get familiar with the level too, in order to do that in the first place.
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah, quite a lot to do from just one level. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how all that plays out.
Yeah.
But no, that would be really fun. Dying Light 2, that was a nice surprise. I just hadn't really thought about Dying Light that much. It was a 2015 or 16 zombie game that came out. And it was essentially, if you take like the parkour and stuff from Mirror's Edge and mix it with like, I don't know, Left 4 Dead or something. It was sort of like that. So it's a parkour sort of zombie game where you're jumping around and stuff and using different weapons and things. It's getting a sequel, which is quite nice. It takes place, I think, like 5 or 10 years. I can't remember the time length that they said, but it's some sort of time jump where some kind of society has been established, and there's a whole big deal about like the control for water and stuff, and at some point in the game you'll be asked like which side to choose between, and that will determine which side of which factions get access to the water, because of course that's a massive resource, so that's quite important.
Yeah,
but no, I'm looking forward to jumping back into that world. It's interesting that I hadn't thought about that game at all, and I wasn't really expecting a sequel anytime soon, and it was like, here's Dying Light 2. I was like, oh yeah, I really enjoyed the first one. There's a second one, so yeah, really looking forward to that. Did you ever play Dying Light 1?
I didn't, no. It is available on PC, and I didn't realise there was parkour elements in it. I got a bit sick of zombie games when it kind of came out, and yeah, there's a million and one zombie games out there right now. Most of them are sort of survival things, so I'd sort of avoided it, but you can get it quite cheaply on Steam at this point, so
probably.
with
been
all the
a couple of years,
and it's got a bunch of DLC and extra stuff with it now, so maybe one that if it's on a reasonable sort of price and I can get like a game of the year edition that's got everything in it for a reasonable price, I might go and pick up a copy of the first one.
But no, that was a big surprise as well, and then a nice surprise as well, but something I was expecting a bit more. Ubisoft are doing a new Trials game. If you're not familiar with those, it's essentially like a 2D balance your bike while you go through a level kind of thing.
Got you.
And you like crash all over the place and whatever. They even did this stunt thing where the guy who was presenting, they had these like wooden slats and stuff, and he like fell onto them, of course like on purpose to make fun of the whole like hilarious ways you can crash and all that sort of stuff in the game. And then it was like Trials Rising is coming. I really like the first three games, which was Trials HD, Evolution, and Fusion was like a futuristic type one,
right?
And then they did Trials of the Blood Dragon, which I've said a lot of times on my podcast that I really didn't like. They basically tried to make a Trials game and mix it with Far Cry, and it just didn't work, and I didn't like it at
right.
all. But no, this is going back to basic sort of just Trials, just good old sort of level platforming and all that sort of stuff. So I'm really happy about that as well. So because I was afraid that they might try and mix it with something else like Splinter Cell or something, I don't know. But no, they're going back to basic Trials game, which I'm very happy with.
Yes.
It's going to be out on Switch as well, so that's, that's quite nice.
Yeah, it looks like the type of game that will work well on a Switch actually.
Yeah, maybe they'll put the other ones on there in the future. Who knows? So, did I talk about Odyssey? I didn't talk about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, did I? Have you got it noted down?
I've got it, but you probably know a lot more about it than I do, because like I say, I haven't been following it very much.
So it's going to take the engine from Origins, which I said was like the refreshed version,
that makes sense.
And the new one. It's not going to include Bayek, but maybe his story is concluded in this DLC?
It's set in, set in ancient Greece, hundreds of years before Origins, apparently. Mm-hmm. The notes that I have said, set in Greece, hundreds of years before Origins, two character options, male and female, Alexos and Cassandra. There's no hidden blade in this version, which is a new thing I think for Assassin's Creed, so you've not got the hand blade, but you do have the broken spear of Leonidas, who is the historic king of Spain. Multiple choice dialogue and romance options, and the other thing they've got is you can fight everybody, but your actions will have consequences as to what happens in the world of moving around you. Which is an interesting idea.
If that happened in Origins, I'd probably be in a lot of trouble, because I'd be a lot of people. Yeah. It's interesting because that's never been a thing in Assassin's Creed before, where getting into a group and let's say you get a new weapon and you just want to try it on a new group of soldiers or something. Sounds like you won't be able to do that, but there'll be risk and reward to it possibly. So yeah, I mean, with the new dialogue options and stuff, that's something they've never done before either. So maybe they're trying to take some good cues from Mass Effect and stuff.
It sounds like they're trying to put a bit more RPG element into it, which is because that's the sort of thing that you get in an RPG game, which I think not necessarily a bad thing, I don't think, for those sort of things. Because one of the things that slightly bored me about Assassin's Creed was it is just running around and stabbing a lot of people quite often.
It did get to that point where it was like, this is all this is now.
Throwing a bit more RPG into it is not a bad thing as well. It's coming fairly quickly as well. It's October 5th, but I guess that makes sense if it's using the same engine.
They took a year off, didn't they, to redo stuff because nobody liked the games anymore. So they're okay, we'll take a year off, we'll fix things. And then they did the Chronicles games and they did the film and stuff. So I really liked Origins, so I'm glad that they're using the same engine and stuff. Of course, a new character, so he'll be kind of cool to discover, he or she, I suppose, because you'll have the option there. But no, very, very happy with that. I've been really happy with what Ubisoft have been doing in the last couple of years and stuff. A lot of their games have really impressed me, so they keep making me happy, which is good.
And Ubisoft have got a Beyond Good and Evil 2 coming as well, which I'm very interested,
kind of cool,
because I loved the first one of that. The second one is another open world RPG. Take control of a customizable pirate, which I'm guessing is Jade, because they're saying Jade is back, who is the main person in the original game. Complete missions on various planets and upgrade to enhance their character along the way, which is basically what the first game did, but in a very kind of basic way, whereas this is obviously going to be much more integral and complex. But it's a wonderful bunch of characters. It's a really interesting world. It sounds like that's going to be next year at the earliest, but I'm still looking forward to that. I think that should be wonderful.
Some bits and pieces of it look a little bit Ratchet and Clank-esque, and I really liked those games. It looks like something I'll definitely be interested in.
There's a sort of, it's kind of an RPG. If it's anything like the first one, there's sort of RPG elements, but there is some of that sort of third person kind of running around Mario, Ratchet and Clank type stuff going on as well. So
the last thing I've got is Ori and the Will of the Wisps. It was announced last year, but they showed some more of it off. Ori and the Blind Forest was the first one. It's probably available on PC and Xbox. It's possibly available in the Game Pass. I'm not 100% sure, but it probably will be at some point.
Okay.
But yeah, I really, really liked the first one. It was a really well done game. And this looks like basically an evolved version of it, which is what a sequel should do, is take the original idea and evolve it and make things better. I remember a sequence from the first one, and it was like one of the fastest bits of gameplay I'd ever done. It was this sort of waterfall part, and you had to just keep jumping up and up, and it was very challenging. So it's a little bit of Microsoft's sort of platformer thing. It's not really, Ori's not really a mascot yet, as opposed to like Mario or Crash, but maybe I could get there one day. I've been very, very impressed with what they've been doing with that. That's coming out next year. So lots of stuff to look forward to.
It's a very beautiful looking side. I've not played it, but it is a very beautiful looking side scroll platformer thing, basically, isn't it? So just looking at videos of it, it's very pretty.
Yeah, I'm finding that more that when new gameplay stuff for most games come out, the first thing people point out is how good things look, because it's just getting better and better. So that should be
so fun. For me, there was a few things that stood out. As I said, the Bethesda panel was the one I was really interested in, because we knew there was a new Fallout game coming from Fallout 76, called 76 because it's based on Vault 76, which is one of the few Fallout vaults, or Vault-Tec vaults, which wasn't messed with by Vault-Tec, because Vault-Tec tend to have this habit of experimenting on the occupants of that are kind of locked in these vaults. And 76 was a control vault, so they basically left it alone, and it functioned as a vault should have done, as in it protected people rather than turning them against each other, or depriving them of stuff, or whatever mind altering things they used to do to people. So it was built to celebrate the tercentenary, which is 300 years of America. That's sort of the selling point of it. It's been like 25 years you've been locked in the vault. They've opened the door to let people out and back into the world. That seems to be the premise of it. There's a lot of changes to the gameplay, though. It's not going to be a straight, normal Fallout game. It is still first or third person role-playing RPG sort of thing. But it's going to be entirely online. It's basically multiplayer, so you can't play it offline. It is multiplayer. They are saying you can play on your own, but it's better to team up with friends. They seem to be saying that there's no NPC characters. So every other human player you meet will literally be another player. They're going to have multiple servers, so you'll be online with dozens, not like in a world with hundreds of other people. There'll be kind of dozens of other people, but you won't actually like see a server list. You won't pick a server list. It will just drop you in with a bunch of other people. The map's full size, the size of the Fallout 4 map, which is pretty enormous because the Fallout 4 map was huge. New rendering and lighting technologies allowed 16 times more detail. It's got six distinct regions, each with their own unique style and risk and rewards. You can build bases and towns, which is, this is where my ears prick up because I love this sort of stuff. You build bases and towns and you can build them anywhere on the map, because with Fallout 4 you were restricted to certain zones and certain size limits, whereas with this one you can basically just decide on a plot of land and drop a town or base down. You can do this on your own or you can build it with friends. It's described as a survival game because obviously all Fallouts have basically been survival games. It's described not as hardcore but as softcore survival. So if you die, you're not going to like lose a bunch of stuff in your progression and that sort of thing. So dying has less consequence. Various new activities that you can play in groups, like on the demo reel, they show a group of people playing a bunch of musical instruments together, which look quite fun. There's going to be new monsters, as you'd expect, because it's new game. I mean, one of the weird things is there are a bunch of nuclear bunkers that are apparently scattered around the map. So if you find all the nuclear codes to a bunker, which you can either find on your own, or it maybe you've got one and a couple of other people have found them, if you then club together with that group, you can set off the nukes, or you could protect the nuclear base if you want nobody else to set it off, but you can set off the nukes and fire them at other people's bases. So it's being released as well quite early. It's November 14th this year. It's coming, apparently. There's a special edition version of it, which is going to have a full-sized working, in air quotes, power armor helmet, which has like a light on it, and it's going to be like the standard power armor helmet, which is fairly good as a special edition. It's about £200, but it's, you know, very cool. The only thing that slightly bothers me about this is the fact that multiplayer is okay. But if I've spent hours and hours and hours building its big base, and then some jerk can come along and just like attack it or blow it up or drop a nuke on it, that doesn't seem like very much fun to me. So the multiplayer element of it worries me a little bit, that it's going to be kind of, that sort of side of things does bother me slightly.
Yeah, I don't like the way that sounds either. I have heard that you can get some sort of blueprint for your base and stuff, and you can kind of like rebuild it fairly quickly. I don't know how all that would work, but
I'm guessing you're going to need resources. One thing they are saying is they might have microtransaction things in there, but if they do, it's going to be from cosmetic stuff. You won't be able to like buy a bunch of, you know, high-end weapons or anything like that, which I think is fine. You know, if people want to spend money on having flashy new hats or whatever it is, that's perfectly okay, as long as it doesn't give them an advantage. So yeah, I'm very happy to have a new game in the Fallout world. The whole thing about not having NPC characters, that slightly bothers me. The idea that I can spend ages kind of building a base and then it can all get blown up. Like you say, if they've got blueprints and it gets blown up and I can rebuild it, as long as it's not going to take me like, you know, 20 hours to recollect all the various bits I need to rebuild the base every time, which would be annoying. So I don't know. I want to see how it works first, but it's an interesting idea. Part of me would have liked a nice big story-driven new Fallout game.
Yeah, you know? Me too. I would have preferred that as well, because I think some people might just kind of mess around in this. I know that's kind of the idea, but I mean in more of a silly way where they're just like mucking up games and stuff.
Like with The Elder Scrolls Online, which is their other big online game, The Elder Scrolls Online has a bunch of NPC characters. You can basically play that without teaming up with anybody else, and you can play that sort of three solo and have a perfectly fun time playing you know, missions which are given to you by various NPC characters. With this, it seems a bit like them trying to cash in on the sort of Fortnite era stuff of building bases and other people trying to blow them up. And if that's all it is, that's a little bit disappointing.
Yeah.
Because it's always, Fallout to me has always been about story and plot. And so, I don't know, we'll see. The other thing they announced was a new Elder Scrolls game called Blades, which is a massive first-person RPG. You play with a member of the Blades, who are the sort of protectors of the king. Basically, they're a sort of king's guard who've been around in various forms in various different games. He's returning to his hometown to find it in a sort of very sorry state. You travel through handcrafted and procedurally generated dungeons to gain funds to rebuild the town however you see fit. So you basically take control of sort of mayor of this town, and as you go on quests to get more money and more stuff, you can use it to rebuild the town and shape it however you want. You'll also be able to visit your friends' towns as well, and it's also a mobile game, which is probably the most important thing. It's a mobile game you can play apparently in portrait or landscape mode. Part of this, they sort of demoed showing somebody sat in a meeting playing with it on their phone, as sort of, you know, because the problem is it's really obvious that you're playing a game if you've got it in landscape mode. If you've got it in portrait mode, you can kind of do it with the one hand and nobody knows that you're playing a game in the middle of that meeting. So so that was sort of their argument. They're also planning to bring it to other devices as well. So it's quite possible it'll end up on things like the Switch. It might end up on desktop. It might end up on other things. They are saying it will work in VR as well, which is really quite interesting. So potentially, if you've got like a Google VR headset, or if you've got like a Samsung VR headset, something like that, it should work in that. And if you're in the VR version, it will connect directly to towns and stuff that people have built in the non-VR version. So they're completely cross-compatible by the sounds of it. That really sounds quite interesting, particularly for a mobile game. It looked very impressive on mobile. And it's coming in the autumn, and it's apparently going to be free, which probably means there's a bunch of microtransactions in it. But the base game is apparently going to be free, which I thought was kind of interesting. But again, we'll see how it works and see what's going on with that. And Elder Scrolls 6 is in development was the other Elder Scrolls news, which they really didn't give us any more information than that, other than there was a little trailer of it flying over one of the regions of Elder Scrolls. Very difficult to tell which one, with Elder Scrolls 6 as a title. So that's something to look forward to. At least we know there is a new one of those coming. And Starfield was the other thing they announced, which is a brand new IP. It's the first new IP they've had in 25 years. It's an epic space sci-fi game. There's absolutely no other news about it other than it's a new IP. It's presumably going to be some form of RPG, and it's set in space, which I'm all up for, because that's something they've not done yet. You know, they've done the kind of dystopian post-apocalyptic. They've done.
Did you play Prey? That was kind of a space survival.
It sort of is.
Game.
And I played the very not the most recent first one, the kind of very original version of Prey. I played, and I haven't played the later ones yet. But that I think could be kind of interesting. In terms of other games companies, EA, as I said, was there. I didn't really watch much of their stuff because I hate EA as a company. The completely undersold Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which basically, as I understand it, they basically had a guy sat in the audience who was working on the game that basically said, oh yeah, we've got this coming. And that was pretty much all we had for about that game.
Yeah, so, Andrea Renee went over to interview him and she was like, oh, well, can you tell us about this new Star Wars game? And he said, like, it's between episodes 3 and 4 and it's called the new
Fallen Order.
And that was kind of it. And it's like, this is a weird way to talk about probably the almost anticipated game. I know a lot of people are looking forward to Anthem, but this is Star Wars. It's like, yeah, so that's a very weird way. They don't know how to do presentation. They really don't.
No,
EA.
It was horrendous.
especially when you make a 10-minute segment for Command and Conquer, which might be a big game, but like, this is E3. It's not, there's not a stage where you show a full match of a mobile game and show a whole match, because they came out and said, oh, is this Command and Conquer? And then the guy was like, should we play a full match? And then They're like, yeah, let's do that. And then they went on for like 10 minutes and it was like...
That seems a bit overkill, particularly for a mobile game. I mean, I know Command & Conquer's, you know, will have a big fan base and, you know, mobile makes perfect sense for a game like that. But that seems like a bit over the top.
EA are a bit strange where, like, they've got the games. I think they've got those. But, like, the way their business management and stuff and their presentation, both of those things just are terrible.
Suck.
But it's like, yeah, you've got Anthem and Star Wars and all those other things in your sports games. It's like, you've got the games, you just don't exactly know what to do with them. So, yeah.
Am I right in thinking Anthem's kind of their answer to Destiny?
Yeah, it sort of seems like that.
Yeah.
But a bit more single player than what Destiny was.
Right, okay.
In some sense, but yeah, it seems like they're kind of their apology for Mass Effect and their Destiny kind of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't see much of the Anthem thing. It's something I need to look into a bit more. Because, I mean, I love BioWare. I just hate what EA have done to BioWare.
With Anthem, they showed like...
I know they showed quite a lot of
concept art and stuff, and then they did like a 5-minute interview, and they showed some gameplay, but not as much as they probably could have. So it's like, yeah, we're going to save Anthem for the end of the show, but then we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So
there was a couple
of... Star Wars, so...
I wish they'd have the Star Wars licensing taken off them because they've done horrendous things with that. And there's a new version of Battlefield coming as well and that sort of thing. But over on Microsoft, a couple of interesting things that they're on the Microsoft stage. Halo Infinite, which is the sixth game in the franchise, set to bring back Master Chief. I hadn't even realised Master Chief had gone because apparently he had, but apparently he's now back because I kind of dropped away from the Halo games a very long time ago.
I don't know what they mean by bring back because he was in the last one. I don't think he went anywhere. So, I guess it's saying, yeah, he is in this game. So,
yes. So, well, yeah, which is fine. And more Halo's perfectly okay with me. It's a fairly solid franchise. It's wobbled a little bit in places, but
Five overall, was quite bad.
Yeah,
but the other four are really good. So
The other big game that I'm really excited for, though, is Cyberpunk 2077, which is from CD Projekt Red, who are the team behind The Witcher. And I mean, we both adored Witcher 3. I think
I think it's one of the best games of all time.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely superb, perfect RPG. That I mean, it took them a long time to get to that point. I mean, it took them two games previously to get to the point of the perfection that was that. But, you know, so I'm very interested in this. Interestingly, they're saying it's an FPS RPG. So it's first-person RPG rather than third-person RPG, which I thought is kind of interesting. And that's a difference from something like The Witcher. So you won't be able to pull out behind the character, which is intriguing. They haven't got a release date for it yet, other than it will be sometime they allege before 2021, but that's fine. CD Projekt Red have this idea of basically it'll be done when it's done, which I think is perfectly sensible. I'd rather they did that, released a half-finished game. There was a few other little bits that came out. You've got things like, it's essentially a cyberpunk game, so set in the future, as the title suggests. You are a sort of investigator, I think, in the game. You've got things like spider bots that can be controlled through an optic implant. There's an inspection system that helps you learn lore or quest info, which sounds like they've slightly nicked that off the Batman Arkham games. There's hacking stuff in there, a ricochet target system that allows you to bounce bullet off walls. I'm sure I've seen that in something else as well. Arm blades, wall running, double jumping. So they've nicked that off Assassin's Creed. you can drive cars and there's going to be vehicle combat. So it basically sounds like a big collection of stuff they've nicked from other places, to be honest. But that's fine.
With those elements to like influence basically a sci-fi Witcher, essentially.
That's what it sounds
guns
like.
And stuff. Yeah. With guns and blades, not just blades and spells and stuff.
So,
I imagine there'll be like several really cool gadgets. There'll probably be a really cool skill tree you can probably do. I've listened to some sort of coverage of the game from people that played it at E3 because they have various show floor demos and stuff that you can go and do if you're there. And a lot of people said that the first person thing just didn't affect anything. And they said that it was still like a great game to play through and everything. So yeah, a sci-fi Witcher, basically.
Yeah, yeah, which I'm all up for. I think that's a fantastic idea. And then Nintendo had a couple of announcements. Fortnite, which is now on the Nintendo Switch. You can get that now, can't you, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I played it, some of it the other
I haven't
day.
Downloaded it yet, but I will go and have a play with it. I've not touched Fortnite at all. I'm aware of it, but I've not touched it.
It's worth noting at the moment that, because basically you sign up with an Epic account, that's how your progress gets collected and stuff. If you've been playing on the PS4, you can't link your Epic account to your Switch version. You'd have to either like create a new account or wait for it to be sorted. So hopefully PlayStation will fix that eventually. But if you've been playing on Steam or Xbox, then you'd still be able to
link your account across.
What it basically says is like if you log in with your PS4 version in the account, it says that like you can't log in basically. And there's not much you can do.
Yes, there's a lot of people ranting at Sony for that. It's that was badly thought through. And then Super Smash Brothers Ultimate released on December 7th. I've never followed the Super Smash Brothers games, so I mean I'm sure that's lovely, but it's not really something that's massively interesting.
I'll try this one out, see what it's like. I just never was like in the Nintendo gaming sort of area when Smash was a big thing.
So PS4, obviously Last of Us 2 was quite a big announcement, but
that demo was incredible.
Showed the demo for that probably coming next year, but they haven't officially announced a date for it yet, so it might be next year, might be the year after, but I mean it's been kicking around for a while but the demo video for that looked really good. And Marvel Spider-Man, which comes on the 7th of September, which again is another game that's been trailered around for about 18 months so far, so I'm looking forward to that as well. I don't play the consoles very much, but there are certain games like Last of Us 2 and Spider-Man that I will probably break out the console for, I would think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Spider-Man's really come back in the last couple of years, and it's been, as a person who really likes the character a lot, that's really good. Like, he's back with the Avengers, you've got a new actual teenage guy that's playing him, you've got the animated film that's coming out, the Into the Spider-Verse, which looks really, really good, and then you've got this game, so...
Yeah, and the game actually looks quite good, because some of the Spider-Man games have been very sucky, and this one, what's good about this is they're taking their time over it, they've not rushed it to go out with with the Spider-Man Homecoming movie, which was my fear. They've kept it, just decided they're going to get it right, which is awesome. So yes, that looks very cool. Just over on PC, there was a few things that are announced at the PC Gaming Show, but there was one game that just stood out for me more than anything else, which is called Maneater, an open world action RPG that has you terrorizing the coast playing as a gigantic bull shark. So that's genius. Features a deep stat system and ability system, which you can customize how you terrorize the coast, and there will also be a full revenge themed story. So presumably, like, you know, some fishing boat killed your wife or something, I don't know, it sounds like wonderfully bizarre, and sometimes those games work brilliantly well, so yes, that looked kind of interesting. But it's an open world action RPG where you play a bull shark. It's called Maneater, one to look out for on the PC.
Sounds a little bit Goat Simulator-esque.
It does, although I think it's been taken a bit more seriously than the Goat Simulator stuff, but right. yes it does. So that's all the stuff for E3. Let's move on to some TV and film news. Only a couple of little bits of TV and film news. Renewals, cancellations and pickups. There is one this week, but it was a fairly major one, as Lucifer has been saved. You know how much I adore Lucifer. I'm so, so happy that this has got picked up. Netflix have saved it for Series 4, which I think is wonderful, wonderful news. It should always really have been on a streaming service, because, I mean, they've talked, you know, after the cancellation, Tom Ellis talked quite a lot about wanting to take the show a lot darker and not being able to do it on network TV, on Fox, because they just won't allow them to do it. And a lot of the procedural stuff was inflicted on them by the network. So although it's being saved for a fourth season, you might see a lot of kind of interesting changes in how it's formatted when it comes over onto Netflix, because it opens up a whole new toy box of things they can do on there. So you might lose some of the procedural stuff. You might get more of an overarching story. You might find that they can go a little bit darker. You can have it a bit more bloody. And I like the idea of stuff they can do with this. It should be really cool. Do you watch
I was going to, and then it got cancelled. But now
you're right,
it's been picked up.
Yeah.
I'll go and check it out because I didn't really want to watch a cancelled show, but now that it's been picked up and saved, hopefully it'll be moved over entirely to Netflix. Hopefully.
And
then I can watch it on there.
Yeah, we don't exactly know what's going to happen with that. It's one of the reasons that it's taking so long to sort this out is because of the rights for it. Like Hulu had the streaming rights after Fox in the US. Okay. Internationally, in a lot of places, it was showing on Amazon. In some places, it was showing on Netflix. Like over here, it was airing on Amazon. The guys at Amazon UK were pushing very hard for Amazon to pick it up, apparently. So they're going to be quite upset because they're going to lose it entirely, I suspect. We don't exactly know what's going to happen with season four, whether the first three seasons will stay on Amazon and then the fourth season will go on to Netflix. That's one possibility. Whether it's a case of the first three seasons will move from Amazon to Netflix, we don't know. They might be still sorting those deals out internationally, but we do know there is a fourth season coming into development. Exactly where that'll end up, we'll have to find out. I mean, I suspect season four, whatever happens, will be on Netflix internationally. It just, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the first three seasons. So that will be something, we'll bring you more news on that in due course.
Yeah, because Robert kind of pitched it to me a bit as like a male version of iZombie, but a bit different.
I can see where the comparison is. Yeah, that kind of makes sense as a sort of male version of iZombie to a certain point. Yeah, it's got that sort of same procedural element in it. I think you'd enjoy it. Certainly, given the other type of shows you like, I think you'd definitely enjoy it. It's a fun show. Few of the bigger news stories. Star Trek Discovery has got a different showrunner again. So this is the second time it's changed showrunner. Gretchen Berg and Aaron Halberts, who took over from Brian Fuller, the littlest hobo of executive producers who can't seem to stay at a job. They took over from him when he left the project or was booted off the project. Again, it seems that there were production problems. So they're saying that these two have been removed due to leadership and operational issues, not creative differences. Production costs had started to go up. There'd been tension in the writer's room due to Halberts apparently verbally abusing one of the staff. This resulted in some of the writers threatening to file HR complaints and to quit the show entirely. So the person that's taking over from them is Alex Kurtzman, who's the co-creator of the series. Kurtzman, as you probably know the name, having written the Star Trek movie, and I think he wrote the second one as well. He was also a co-creator of Sleepy Hollow and Hawaii Five-O. Usually works with Roberto Orci on TV projects. I mean, it makes sense for him to step in because he was the co-creator of the show. So he's kind of writing the ship for them now. They're apparently in hiatus after the first five episodes, which was planned anyway. So it gives him time to sort of sort everything out before properly taking over as showrunner. He's going to be doing it solo, but they may bring a second person in to help him out along the way. They produced a brilliant first season despite all the production problems. So I have no doubt that this will not cause them any problems. I just thought it was kind of interesting that they've gone through another set of showrunners in two seasons already. So
yeah, I mean, I was very new to Star Trek, still pretty much am. I've only seen 15 episodes. So this was my first sort of proper Star Trek series, and I thought it gave me a great introduction. So yeah, I'm still looking forward to season two. I think they left season one on an interesting note. They did a very good job with the first season. Of course, you got Sinequa in there as the lead. She did a very, very good job.
She was brilliant.
I'm looking forward to seeing her again. So it should hopefully be good.
Yeah, it should be. I'm very much looking forward to that. We don't know exactly when that's going to come back, other than it's going to be 2019. Expecting if they're shooting now, it's probably going to be early 2019, I would have thought.
Is it definitely 2019 then?
Yeah, it's definitely coming. It's definitely coming next year, but I suspect 2019 will be sort of January 2019. I don't know that for a fact, but that would be my feeling, because that would be around about a year after the first.
So maybe it would be in like a mid-season sort of slot.
I suspect it'll be in a mid-season sort of slot. I mean, it goes out on CBS All Access, so it's on a digital service over there. It's obviously Netflix worldwide as well. So, you know, it's not like they have mid-season as such, but it'll be in that sort of area. The other news story I have is Vampire Diaries star Paul Wesley has reteamed with Kevin Williamson, who was the exec producer on Vampire Diaries for Tell Me a Story, again for CBS. This is also coming to CBS All Access. We don't know where it's going to end up internationally. But Tell Me a Story sounded interesting because it's a modern retelling of beloved fairy tales twisted into a dark psychological thriller. Set in New York City, first season takes stories such as The Three Little Pigs, Little Red Riding Hood, and Hansel and Gretel, mashing them together into a subversive tale of love, loss, greed, revenge, and murder. I mean, it basically sounds like a more adult-orientated version of Once Upon a Time, pretty much. So, I mean, reminds me very much of the Telltale game Wolf Among Us. That's a very similar kind of premise to it as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Wesley will be playing Eddie, a derelict and troubled individual whose petulance is fueled even more by his problems with drugs and alcohol. Though he works as a bartender, he also splits his time as a low-level drug dealer and part-time thief with his older brother Mitch, who never fails to treat Eddie as the lowly delinquent that he is. So it's a very different sort of character. He's also going to be joined by Daniela Campbell, who was on the originals, so she has a connection to it as well. She was on Runaways. Billy Magnus, who was on Get Shorty and Black Mirror. Kim Cattrall, who of course was on Sex and the City. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting sounding show, I think. It sounds sort of fairly dark. Again, it's on, you know, digital service CBS All Access, so it means you can be a little bit darker with it than you could potentially be with something that's directly on network TV. So yeah, I think that sounds kind of interesting, and yeah, it's an interesting looking cast, so one to keep an eye out for. But that's called Tell Me a Story. That So that's all the news we've got for this week. We're going to skip the interview, I think, because we're running quite long because of all the E3 stuff. So we're going to move on to some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We have Shooter, which is back for its third season with Ryan Philippe. He's starring in it. That's 22nd of June that arrives back. I know a lot of people seem to quite like that, but I've never watched it, so I don't know.
I watched the pilot and then I didn't go back. I didn't dislike it or anything.
Just didn't grab you enough to make you want to watch the next episode. Yeah. I don't know. So that's Shooter Season 3 coming to Netflix on the 22nd of June. The Last Leg, which I absolutely love, topical comedy show with Adam Hills, Alex Brooker and Josh Widdicombe. That's coming back to Channel 4 for its 14th season. That's on the 22nd June at 10 p.m. Second half of Nashville Season 6 and final season. That's coming to Sky Living on the 22nd of June at 9 p.m. I've never watched any of Nashville, but I know you really like it. So.
Yep, time to say goodbye. Yes. Not in a bad way. It doesn't like need to go or anything, but no. They've decided to finish the story. I'm looking forward to seeing what that even means for this show. They've got 8 more episodes because it's a 16 episode season. They split it into 2 lots of 8. So they've got 1 slot of 8 left. It ended on an interesting cliffhanger, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. But I've really enjoyed the show for the 6 years it's been on. It did get moved around a bit and stuff. But,
yeah, it did. It got cancelled.
It didn't fit the story too much and that, but yeah, it's time to say goodbye. Sorry.
Yeah, 6 seasons is a good run. I think between 5 and 7 seasons is a solid run for a series. And if they want to end it at that point, they're allowed to end it properly, that's fine by me. I think that's perfectly fine. A couple of other big shows starting this week. Luke Cage, season 2 of that sees Mike Colter back as the titular character. That's on the 22nd of June that arrives, which I'm very much looking forward to because I enjoyed the first season of that. Wentworth Prison, season 6 of that coming to 5 Star, which is running way, way behind the US or Australia, I think, which is where it's originally from. 23rd of June at 10 p.m. for that on 5 Star. Preacher, season 3 of that coming the 25th of June, which again, great series. Really enjoy that show. So that's coming on the 25th of June. Looking forward to that. And The Affair, season 4 of that coming to Sky Atlantic on the 26th of June at 9 p.m. Again, not something I've watched, but I know it's quite popular with people. So I'm sure there's a lot of people looking forward to that coming. And that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to add.
I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff coming out. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of it. I mean, I get to redo the whole nostalgic Crash Bandicoot thing next week again with a new level. So that'll be really fun as well.
Very cool. So if you want to catch Matt, you can find me over at entertainmenttalk.org and you can see all their gaming stuff. You can hear us talking about Westworld over on there as well.
And lots and lots and lots of different things.
Lots and lots of other other stuff, but yes, we do a weekly Westworld podcast over together. So
got two more left. So
yes, two more left. Great show as well. For us, you can go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see the latest air date info. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, you can email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. To find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye. Take care.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.